So I'm going to bring up the homework. If you guys want to ask me anything about the homework, you can ask me now. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. This one, right?
Is it stopping there? They're stopping somewhere?
It's stopping at one. So, let's see. When you write the... Okay, so how many... Okay, when it starts up and it goes up, right? How many blocks is it walking? N, right? Then it's walking N again. Okay, blah, blah, blah. At the end, it's going to be... Okay, I'm going to start with 3. So it's 2 3s. So 3 plus 3, which are these? This one and this one. And then 2 plus 2. And then plus 1 plus 1 plus 2. That's what it starts. And it starts with N. Yeah. The graph? The graph? You can't repeat the letters.
Can't repeat the letters.
No. So, let's see. Not a cycle-free path between A and B. So a non-cycle, so I'm giving you a counterexample. It's A, D, C, B. Right? There's a cycle in there. Or something like A, D, C, B, D. That would be a cycle. So yeah, you cannot repeat notes. But you need to go from F to B. So, does that make sense? Any other questions about the homework? No? Okay. It's due a week from today, so you still have time to think about it. There's a lot of the halting problem, because the halting problem is going to be on the exam. Oh, also, the final, sample final is out, and it's on the webpage, and I'll show that to you. So on the webpage, go down all the way, and then for today's date, it says sample final out, and there's a link, and you can click on it, and it takes you to the sample final. Yeah. Yes, final will be exactly like the midterm. I will make solutions for it, yes. And also I'm going to decide when the review session is going to be. So thanks for everybody who voted. If you haven't voted, please vote on the review session. There's like a tie right now between Tuesday 1 to 3 and Wednesday 4, 3 to 4 or something like that. But I'll figure it out, and I'll send you guys an email. And also, the last lecture, I will answer questions about the sample final. I think the best way to study for the final is to, of course, go over homework questions and make sure that you know all the homework questions and understand them. And then try to do it yourself and come with questions. And then, you know, when I solve the problems on the board, you can kind of confirm. It's kind of a confirmation for you. So... That's what I suggest. But definitely go back to the homework questions. It's only going to be homework questions. There's not going to be anything other than homework questions. So if there's any homework question that you still feel like don't feel good about, make sure you either come to office hours or ask me in class, hey, can we go over the halting problem again, or can we go over whatever, the barcodes again, and I will be happy to do it. Okay? Next time... I'm going to be away, so Michael Littman will teach this class. There's going to be clicker questions, just like today. Like any class, there's going to be attendance. He's much more fun than me, so it's going to be a really, really cool. He's very entertaining. So, as you've seen from the videos he's been singing, he's the person who made those videos. But he's more fun live than for videos. All right, so I'm going to close this. Any other questions about homework? No homework? No? All right. We're going to go back and pick it up. We're going to do clicker questions first. So here's a question for you. This is a little... This is not really like anything we've done. It's more like you guys figuring it out. So you have opportunity to make lots of money. And there's two options, and you have to choose between the two options. So which of option A or option B helps you make more money? So option A is that you get $200,000 every day for 30 days for a month. You get $200,000 a day, or for 30 days, you get 1 penny on the first day, 2 pennies on the second, 4 pennies on the third, and so on. Each time, each day, the amount doubles, and you start with 1 penny. Okay? So which one of these options helps you make more money? Which one will... Yeah. Of course, you want to make as much money as possible. I'll stop at 2:15. Three more seconds. Stopping. Tough choice, right? Okay. Well, let's figure it out. So how much money do you make if you use the first option? So 200,000 times 30 is $6 million, which is not bad at all. Alright, let's figure out the next one. So the next one we're gonna figure it out in pennies, and then we're gonna convert the pennies to dollars. Okay, so it's 1 + 2 + 4 + 8 + ... plus basically 2 to the 30, right? So this is 2 to the 0, 2 to the 1, 2 to the 2, 2 to the 3, ... 2 to the 30. Okay. So this whole sum, this is approximately 2 to the 30. Okay. We're going to say that this is bigger than 2 to the 30. Does everybody agree with that? Does anybody disagree? Yeah.
Actually, since, you know, day 1 we're getting a penny, day 30 we're only getting 2 to the 29th.
2 to the 29th. Okay, which is bigger than 2 to the 29th. Which is bigger than 2 to the 29th. Okay? It's actually 2 to the 30th minus 1. So it's almost 2 to the 30th. Okay. So how much is this? 2 to the 29th. Well, that's 2 to the 10. Times 2 to the 10 times 2 to the 9. Because when you multiply numbers that have the same that so? Is that true? Okay, so we cut too much, right? This is 2 to the 30th minus 1. So that's going to be 1,000 times 1,000 times 1,000, which is 10 Newton. Okay, so 1,000 times 1,000 times 1,000, how much is that? That's 1 billion, right? But it's 1 billion pennies. Right? So I have 3 zeros, 6 zeros, 9 zeros. Cut to, so I have 10 million, approximately $10 million. Alright? So the minus one doesn't really matter, and this is actually bigger because this is not 1,000, it's 1,024. So this problem is showing how big exponential rates grow. So this is an exponential rate, right? You start with one, you continue with two, you double it every day, you double the amount. And you get, in a month, you get $10 million. So that's more, it's better to do option B than to do option A. It's more dollars. But it's very unintuitive, right? You think that $200,000 a day is a lot of money, but option B is better. Yeah. What's that? Sorry, I can't hear you. Two to the 29th is too small, right? Is that what you're asking me? Well, you have to project. If you want to ask. Can you repeat it? All right. Are you sure? Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Did anybody do B and figure out how much money it was? Did I make any mistakes on that? I had 20 millions in the beginning, but I think it was because 2 to the 30th was actually 2 to the 29th. Okay, here's something that we did before. So for Hanukkah, you light one candle for each night, right? So you have N nights of Hanukkah. And the first night you light one candle, the second night you light two candles, the third night you light three candles, the fourth night you light four candles, and so on, right? The question is, how does the number of candles grow with the number of nights? So, just a note, you light a candle on the first night, you light two candles, different candles on the second night, you light three different candles on the third night. What's the total number of candles that you light for N nights? And the growth rate is like big O of 1, A, B, big O of N, C, big O of N squared, D, big O of N log N, and E, big O of N squared log N. Stopping at 1:45, or maybe 2, let's say 2. Okay. So I would would like to hear somebody who answered N and somebody who answered N squared. Please. Because I can see a point for both of them. But, yeah. Yeah. You guys see N squared? Can, does somebody use N? Answer N and wants to? Before. No. All right. Why did you say N squared? So, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus that plus N. And we know we've said that this a few times that this sum is equal to N times N plus 1 over 2, which is N squared over 2 plus N over 2. Ignoring the lower order terms and the constants, you get to go. And somebody would answer N. I think that if they thought about it like, you light a candle, you light this candle here on the first night, on the second night you light this candle and a new candle. On the third night you light these two and another one. So then the number of candles is going to be N. But I said that you use this candle once and then you don't use it the second night. The second night you use these two. The third night you use three new ones. So it's going to grow like this. Any questions? So this is about how much time does it take to do an operation on a sorted list and on an unsorted list. So the problem that you need to figure out is the smallest number, does the smallest number in the list appear twice? If you have a list of n elements, how long would that take on an unsorted list, and how long would that take on a sorted list? So A, unsorted, it's taking big O of log n and sorted big O of 1. B, unsorted big O of n squared and sorted big O of n squared. C, unsorted big O of n, sorted big O of 1. D, unsorted big O of log n and sorted big O of n. And E, unsorted big O of 1, sorted big O of log n. I'll stop at 2. Stopping. Nice. Very nice. Okay, good. So, just a hint for the answer D, usually I'm not aware of something that would take a smaller time on an unsorted list than on a sorted list. So, usually the fact that the list is sorted usually helps. They might be equal times, it might not matter, but the unsorted time for D, the unsorted takes big O of log n, and that's better, that's shorter than big O of n. So that's usually not the case. Unsorted stuff, answering questions on unsorted lists takes longer usually than answering on a sorted list. Okay. So how would we, okay, let me just go through this real quick. How would we do the unsorted? If the list is unsorted, how would we answer the question? How do we do it? What's the algorithm? That number again. So that's 2n, which is big O n. What about sorted? How does that help? How is that? Yeah.
You just have to look at the beginning of the list.
Exactly. You just have to look at the beginning of the list. They're both going to be there. So, good. All right. Let's try another one. Okay, so this one is about palindrome. So a palindrome number is a number that is symmetrical, like 1, 2, 6, 2, 1, right? If you read it right to left, it's the same as if you read it left to right. That's called a palindrome number, or 4, 1, 1, 4, right? How long does it take to answer the questions, are there any palindrome numbers in the list? In an unsorted and in a sorted list. So is A unsorted log n, sorted big O of 1, B unsorted n squared, sorted n squared, C unsorted n, sorted big O of 1, D unsorted log n, sorted n, and E unsorted big O of 1, sorted big O of log n. Is that confusing? Yeah. The right answer is actually not up there. So, I can give everybody credit for it. But you can click. What's that? So, the right answer, what's the right answer? Can somebody tell me what the right answer is? Is it me? Yeah. Oh, why is that? Both are big O of N, is that what I said? Yeah, that's right. Because how would you do it? Yeah, so you have to go, you have a list. And you have to go and go in the first number. Is the first number a palindrome? Yes or no. Is the second number a palindrome? Yes or no. You have to check every number if they're a palindrome. And so that's a big O of N. It doesn't matter if the list is sorted or unsorted. I'm going to stop this. You guys can click. Finish clicking, please. So the closest would be B, because they're the same. It doesn't matter, you know, what that the list is sorted or unsorted. Okay, everybody click. I'm stopping it. Okay. And I think the majority said B, which is good. Sorry about that. Okay, so now, which of these functions grows the fastest? So which one is the biggest function? What's the fastest growing rate? A, big O of n, B, big O of log n, C, big O of n log n, D, big O of n squared, and E, big O of n squared log n. since we've been talking about which algorithms are better, we're comparing them, we need to know what's better. So this is what's worse, right? What's the fastest growing? I'll stop at one. Nobody chose A and B. That's great. Okay, so how do we figure this out? Well, the point is, the one thing to remember, if you want to remember it, you can just take your graph with you if you want to the exam. I don't care about that. The one thing to remember, though, is that both n and log n are functions that grow with as n grows. So what is log n? What do we say that log n represents? What is this function? So if you have a number n, what is the log of that number? What's the intuition of it? So we said it's how many digits are in the number, right? So if n is like a million, what is log n? How many digits does this number have? 7, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If n is like 9, what is log n like? Approximately. How many digits are in this number? 1. Thank you. Okay. What about 23? Okay, good. Right? So this log n, they both grow. If n is really, really large, log n is going to be very large too. If n has, I don't know, a billion digits, which is a very large number, log n is going to be a billion. So it's they both grow, but log n grows slower than n. So n grows like this, like a line, and log n grows like this. It grows, but it grows slower. So this is log n, and this is n. Okay? So now, if you multiply anything to n, let's multiply these by n. So then n times n is n squared, right? And n times log n is n log n. We have the same amount multiplied by a larger number or a smaller number. Which one of these is going to be larger? The first one or the second? The first one, why is that? Exactly. So this is larger than this. So this is going to be larger than this. So between, same thing for n squared. We have n squared. Oh, I guess that was a... Okay, now we have n squared and n squared log n. Right? Which one is going to be larger between the two? So compare n squared with n squared log n. Is this too easy? The second one, why is that?
Because n squared is times by another number, which would make it greater than n squared by itself.
Yes. So log n squared log n is going to be larger than n squared because we multiply n squared by something that can be significantly large. Can be large, right? Alright, that's why and that's actually the order in which B is the smallest growing, A is the next one, and then they go in order. So, which one of these grows most slowly? I think that there's the same options in the same order. stop at 45. So we said that log n will grow slower than n. All right. Now, we've been talking a lot about big O notation. How would you express in big O notation 4n squared log n plus 23 times n log n plus 45? Is that a big O of n, b big O of log n, c big O of n log n, d big O of n squared, or e big O of n squared log. Stopping at 120. Stopping. Wow. Okay. All right, good. So what is the rule here? Where the rule is, get rid of the lower order terms, you said, right? So in order to know what the lower order terms are, we need to know that graph, that 45 is low order, n log n is low order, n squared log n is high order, right? So this is the highest order. We get rid of everything, right? Does anybody have questions about why n log n is smaller than n squared log n, it's lower order? We multiply an n here, so that's going to make this bigger. So we get rid of these, and then we get rid of the constants, so we are left with that. All right. Okay, we're not going to do this right now, but I would like to do the teaching evaluations, and then we're going to continue. I'm going to leave the room. I need somebody to volunteer to take them to the computer science secretary, which is in Hill Center on the third floor. Okay. And one thing I wanted to mention was that you probably are going to get these in all your classes. They are very important, and you have a very big word to say in your teachers, and it's also, you know, it's a responsibility to give feedback. These are read for faculty who, when they decide if they should get tenured or if they should get a promotion, these are very important, and they get read actually, and they count a lot. So for me, it's not going to matter too much because I'm not really a professor. I'm a graduate student, but I just wanted to encourage you to take them very seriously, and you know, on all your classes, just try to do your best in providing feedback too. For your professor. So I'm going to give these out. And instructor's name. You just put... thanks for doing that. I'm going to move on and finish up parallel computers, hopefully. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Maybe if we have time at the end. So we talked about parallel computers, how the speed of the processors is kind of, it was growing and growing and growing, and it's kind of limited now. There's all kinds of problems. So one way to speed it up is to have a lot of computers working on one task at the same time. And so to show kind of what problems are good for parallel computers and what problems are not good, we showed this example about the fence, and that you can either divide the jobs, either specialized people or processors on a certain task. So a whole bunch of people do open the cans, a whole bunch of people prepare surfaces, divide, give job, different jobs to different people, or we could have every person get a part of the fence and do all the jobs on that part of the fence. So this is the model for applications that actually use parallel computers. And we're going to see how they do it. We also saw the thing with the telephone. So the question was, how many people have a phone number that has two or more fives in it? And so one way to do it would be for me to ask every single person, does your phone number have two fives in it? Does your phone number have two fives in it? Or people who have two fives could raise their hand, and then I have the answer almost instantly, which gives you kind of a sense of how much faster this can go. So there's this was the algorithm comparisons, and it's big O of N. If I do it myself, if I query each person, I have to go through all of you. If it's about big O of log N if I do it in a parallel way. And we're going to see why. This was the program with the cats, where I can either do it sequentially, and this is just looking through the list of costumes. Each cat, does it have a green costume? And if they do, count it up. The way to do it in a parallel way is to broadcast a subroutine, green check, to all the cats. If a cat, every cat, if they receive green count, they check their costume. If it's two, they change the variable. They add one to this global variable. So each cat is responsible for their own costume, and they have to only check their costume. If it's green, they're going to add one to green count, a variable that they all have access to. Kind of like you guys, each one works on their own phone number, and you don't have to. You only have to work with one phone number. You can give the answer really fast. Same with the cats. And one application for this is the map reduce and reduce algorithm that Google actually uses. So this is based on two fundamental operations in programming, which are map and reduce. So map says you take a function, you can take a subroutine, and you assign it and you apply it on certain data. Reduce is you summarize all the results, and we're gonna see how that works. So for example, you have a central computer server that needs to do a query on a ton of data, on all the words on the internet. So there's a task that needs to be done, and there's a huge amount of data. Imagine this is a lot of data, and it has all these computers that it can use. The map operation sends the task to each computer. So each computer, the main computer, sends the task to all the computers, and also divides the data among all those computers, right? So in the end, what happens is the manager, the main computer, assigns a task, assigns the data to each computer, and now each computer does the same task on their chunk of the data. Kind of like a fence painting, right? Do all the tasks. The task is, prepare the surfaces, open the cans, paint, and clean up on your part of the fence. So this is exactly like that. And when they're done, each of them has results. They send it back to the main computer, to the manager, and all the manager has to do is just put the results together. So that's the reduce operation. Take all the processing and then just combine the results together, which is very quickly. So in my case, in our case, the task was the map task was look, does your phone number have two fives in it? And then you guys raise your hand, and I counted everybody who raised their hands. So that was my review operation, which is so much shorter than actually looking through the whole data. And so this is kind of summarizing the MapReduce algorithm. Google published it in 2004, I think, and they kind of explain how it works. And this is, they haven't published anything ever since. It's very hard to learn about how Google does stuff. They keep it very secret. But this is one of the last things that they actually release. So the main machine breaks down the data and assigns a task, and when the machines are done, they send back the data, and the main machine puts it all together. One application where this is used is Google Hot Trends. And I think that the website is trends.google.com. And what Google Hot Trends is, it's listing all the topics, all the searches that were not hot yesterday, but they are hot today. So, for example, so this kind of shows what people are looking for. They weren't looking for before, but they're looking for now. And this is from Monday, actually. And you can see that, can anybody guess why the first one, top one is the hottest was? The actor who died, very known actor. Of course, Best Cyber Monday deals. You know, it was Cyber Monday, the Monday after Black Friday. That was the second topic. Bare gallbladder uses. I'm not sure why that's. Anybody know why that was hot? They find something new. I was looking at it. I actually Googled it. And there's nothing like, they just found out that it has all these health benefits and people are drinking it. I don't know. Anyway, what about the fourth one? This is all entertainment. If you don't follow it, so this is a famous R&B singer, and there's a tribute for him at this Music Awards show. Anyway, there's a lot of searches. Freddie Jackson was actually one of the people who sang that tribute. Opera has something about Christmas. You sign up and there's 12 days and you can get gifts, I think, or something. Usually Opera is in top 10, so I don't know how she does that. Anyway, so those are the hot searches from Monday. And if you go actually to trends.google.com, you can click on, they actually give you the top 10 and you can click on it. And it shows you a graph of the volume of searches, how many searches of this kind have been done. And you can see that before 6 p.m., there's nothing. And then a huge peak, and that's what Google Trends shows. So how do they do that? How do you think they do it? How can you do that? How can you figure out what was not, there are not a lot of searches about yesterday, and there's a lot of searches today? What do you need to keep track of? Well, you need to keep track of how many, for every single query in the world, you need to keep track of how many people have used that query, right? So, and then you use the MapReduce, you use a lot of computers to, you know, to actually search in that data, to sort it, right? You have to sort it by this differential. So, you know, one of the first steps is to have an index. So an index is just a dictionary. It's like, you know, this query had this many results yesterday, or maybe a week before, or maybe 2 days before, one day before, today, and so on. So the index, just the index, just the dictionary, is 20 terabytes. 20 terabytes is, how much is 20 terabytes? So, 20 terabytes is 20,000 gigabytes, which is how many, so multiply by 1,000 megabytes, so 20 million megabytes. And each megabyte is 1 million bytes. And 1 byte is 1 character. So So this is like a ton of information. It's very, a lot of, just the index is very big. And then they use about 5 to 10 MapReduce operation to build it. So 5 to 10 times they figure out what the task is, they send it to the computers, the computers report back, and so on. So that's the kind of data that Google uses, and it's pretty impressive. Okay, so we're gonna do an experiment. Yeah. You guys are going to add up, however many, 60 people, you're gonna add up 60 numbers. So think of the first digit of your phone number, that's going to be your number. If you don't have a phone number, then choose the first digit of a phone number that you know or you memorize, okay? And here's how we're gonna do it. I'm gonna describe you the experiment, and if we're not paying attention, it's gonna be very hard. So everybody will raise their hand, and they're going to be thinking of a number. Then you have to find another person, and you're going to tell your numbers to each other, add them up, and one person is going to remember the sum, and the other person is going to put their hand down. Okay? Let's try. All right, so think of your number. Everybody raise your hand. Okay? And it would be nice if everybody would participate. That would be fun. All right, raise your hand. And now, find one other person, sum up your numbers, and decide who's going to keep their hands up and who's going to put their hand down. So let's try to do that. No two hands. One hand, please. Thank you. All right. All right. Good. So I need to see about half the hands, hopefully. Please raise your hand so I can see it pretty well. Okay. All right. That's why I said one digit, so it wouldn't be too hard to add up. All right. So now do the same thing. People who have your hand up, find another person, one person, add up your numbers. One person remembers the sum, the other person puts their hand down. But the one person needs to have their hand up still. Okay? So now we need about a quarter of the people. All right? Please do that again. Okay, please do that again. So people who have their hand up, find a pair. You can yell it if you want. Okay, hands up please. What happened? Okay, continue. Do that one more time. Okay, hands up please if you have your... Okay, so two more people? Really? No, three more people. Okay, one more time. So one, there's three hands up, right? Can you raise your hand high? Okay, three people. You two. Okay, do you have your sum? 207, right? Okay? So this is one way to sum up 60 numbers. Which sounds about right. And we had about how many? Six steps. Okay? So that's the parallel version. So if you guys were processors, you were 60 processors, and you had to add up 60 numbers, this is one way to do it, right? If I were to add up the numbers, I would probably go something like this. What's your number? Yeah. 3. What's her number? 7. What's your number? All right, but I would have to go sequentially through every single person and ask them what the number is. What is that a big O of? If there's N people, if there's N processors, Yes, it's big O of N if I do it by myself, right? Okay, now what about what we just did? What happens? So in one step, how many hands went down? So we had a list of N numbers, right? 60 people. How big was the list after one step? Okay, so in one step, so we have N numbers. After one step, how many numbers do we have to add up? Why is that?
Because if you divide it by 2 people and then 1 of the 2 people lowered their hand, then it's half.
Yeah, so half people lowered their hand, half people had their hand up, N over 2. What about after 2 steps? How many numbers do we have to add up? So we had N over 2, half of them have their hands up after 2 steps. How much is that?
N over 4.
Thank you. N over 4. Da, da, da. How many steps do I need to reach 1? What is the number of times I can divide a number by 2 before I reach 1? What is that called?
Four.
That's the definition of something. Something that is weird in this class. One of the weird things in this class that we learned about. The number of times I can divide a number by 2 before I reach 1. Sounds like an insect. It's not going to work. That's the log, right? So, how many steps do I have here? So, okay, so we had 60 people, right? Then we had 30. Then we had 15. Then we had about 7. Then we had 3. And then we had 2. And then we had 1. Okay? Yeah. Okay, so there's a lot of math involved in that. The thing is, the difference between having a constant number of processors and having a not a constant number of processors. Because you don't have a constant number, and that makes the difference, in a way. It's what. I'm going to go back a little bit. How many steps do we need? It's the number of times that I can divide the number by 2 before I reach 1. Log n steps. So, doing it the way we did it, I know it took a long time, but if we had processors, it would be much, much faster, right? Log n is much, much faster than n. If n is a million, log n is 7. So after 7 steps, we have our sum. Okay? So this was the sequential approach.
Just a question. You said before that if you count the number of digits, that's log n.
Right.
N of 60. What does log n mean?
Right. So I'm going to say, this is log base 2. That's a very good question. Log base 2, this is log base 2. And before it was log base 10. So the number of times, the number of digits, this is log base 10 of n. And this is going to be 7. This is like 2n is big O of n, and 100n is big O of n. It's the same, there's a constant between these. But yeah, that's the question.
Okay, so, any other questions? The sequential algorithm is, I just go and add up all the numbers, and that's big O of n. This was what we just did. The parallel approach, the parallel processors approach, where we all work together and we communicate two by two, and that gives us a. So this one gives us a big O of log n, because every round we have the number of processors. Okay, so you might ask, what about stuff that's very sequential? What about tasks that are like, you need to do step one before you need to do step two, and you need to do step two before you need to do step three, like a treasure hunt, for example, right? How would you do something like that efficiently in parallel? Because it's such a sequential, like you can't have stuff working in parallel, right? So the way treasure hunt works is that you start at one, and you see where your next hint is, you go to two, and then you see where your next hint is, and you go to three, and then four, five, six, and then you finally see where the treasure is, and you're happy, right? So that's treasure hunt. And that's, a lot of problems are, yeah, I like that guy too. And a lot of problems are like that. And for example, something that's called chain following. So in this problem, you have a whole bunch of processors, and there's some information, at the nth processor has the information that you need. And you have to figure out, how do you find that last location from the first one in an efficient way? It looks like you have to go through all of them to find that information. How can you do it more efficiently? And the way you do it more efficiently is 9 sees 23. That's like your address or something. So 9 knows that his neighbor is 23. And what it can do, the communication is only one way. What it can do, it can say, hey, 23. I'm your neighbor on the other side, right? So 23 doesn't know about 9. It knows about 13, but it doesn't know about 9. But 9 can say, hey, I'm your neighbor too, you know? So 9 sends, every processor sends their address to their neighbor that they can communicate with, and now the every processor knows their other where they can find the other neighbor too. So it's almost like you have a chain both ways, right? So now what can happen is 23 knows that has a link to 9 and has a link to 13. So each processor sends their other neighbor on the other side. So for example, 23 sends 13 to 9 and saying, this is my neighbor on the other side, right? So now each processor can see their one-step neighbor and their two-step neighbors. So they have information about both of them. And now 9 doesn't need 23 anymore. It just cares about 13 because it wants to get closer to the goal. And so they kind of skip every other processor. And now how big is this chain, right? So now you don't really need the other processors because your goal is to get to N. And so we basically have the number of processors in one step. So we did a whole bunch of operations, but they're all a constant amount of time. But in one step, we have the number of processors. We can do the same thing. We have at each step, we have the number of processors. So how many steps do we need for that? If in one step, we have n over 2 processors. After two steps, we have it again. We have n over 4. We have it again, and then we get 1. Processor. We get to the goal. How many steps is that? How many rounds? So
log n.
It's log n, right? Because it's, again, the number of times I can have n before I get to 1. So this kind of summarizes the way, you know, Google does it, because you have a lot, you have the same operation. When you do a query, you have the same operation. Find your name or something on the internet on a huge amount of data. You have a huge amount of data, the same task, so you send the same query to all the computers,
and each computer gets a chunk of the internet, and then they send it back to you, and you just have to summarize the results. So that's how it works. Another very interesting application is SETI at Home. It's Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. So this is probably the biggest parallel computer in the world. And what it does is, so they basically say they have all this data from outer space, and they want to scan it. They want to see if there's any weird signals coming from outer space. The problem is they get millions and millions and millions of signals per second, and there's not enough computing power. They don't have enough computers to do it. So what they said was, everybody, please download our software. So you download their software. They send you a piece of the sky, and when you don't use your computer, so it, you know, it's very, you know, the processor works very hard on it. When you don't use your computer, when it goes into screen save mode, it actually works with that data. And when it's done, you know, figuring out, processing it, it sends it back to them, and they see the result on it. So this is using all the computers, whoever wants to sign up for it. And, you know, if you want to do it, that would be very cool. They say they have this joke about, like, how if your computer finds extraterrestrial life, you're going to probably get the Nobel Prize, but you have to share it with 50 million people, so, or something. Anyway, you can do that. I think that's really cool. They haven't found anything yet, so, yes. But again, this idea of putting a lot of computers together and them all of them participating together in this huge task that that needs to be done, right? The sky is pretty big, so. So other examples for parallel computers, computer graphics are using that. You can do one processor per pixel, so then the processor figures out how light needs to be reflected. Then you have weather modeling, which is also very important. So the thing about weather is that it's very hard to predict. So if you have all the data about each, let's say, cube of the air, you know, the humidity, the temperature, and so on, that's what helps them predict the weather for the next day or two. And so you give each computer one chunk of air, and they all process it and work together to figure out what the weather is going to be. Mailing out phone bills is also something that's very easy to be parallelized. There's a lot of image processing that can be done in parallel. For example, if each processor handles one bit, we've seen this in the beginning of the class. Each pixel has three pieces of information: the amount of red, the amount of green, and the amount of blue in it. Each one requires one byte. So you can represent the red by a number between 0 and 255. That's the amount of red. The amount of green is between 0 and 255. And the amount of blue, the same thing. This color, purple, is 161 of red and 129 of green and 226 of blue. And so let's say you wanna process the image. So you have an image at your input is an image, and then you construct the output image. If you want to make it all, if you want to copy it, the red, so this is pixel by pixel, right? The red pixel in the output image is going to be exactly the same as the red in the input image, so you just copy it. So this is just going to make a copy of it. If you only want the green, you zero the red and the blue, and that's going to, and you just copy the green. If you want to make a grayscale, you just average the amount of red and green and blue. You can mix them up. Anyway, these are a few ideas, and I think that's it.